Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob R8XFT.
T Pangolin.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
Welcome to Modcast 60 with me, Rob R8XFT.
Jan Boruta.
Alpha Shard.
Yes.
Vice Virtuoso.
We haven't got Jet with us, unfortunately, but we do have two people that are well known on the forum. So we're going to be finding out a little bit more about those two.
The Battle for the Nile Civs, which I was, of course, delighted to see. They're all going in the mod, the fantastic civs. I know you were involved in the artwork for quite a few of those leaderheads. Again, it's nice to see the community having different modders coming up with the Nile Civs as it was. At least four different sources, didn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, but we collaborated on all of them.
Absolutely. I mean, we had Tomite, who did the Garamantes, for example, and Tassisio, did he do one?
He did the Hyksos and helped with Cleopatra.
Of course, JFD and Paokai.
Yes. Sukrutak made the early Egypt by himself, pretty much.
He did the Narma one, and that's quite interesting as well, because there's the extra culture from the... Is it the songs?
There are the hymns, but there are in the Akhenaten's Egypt. Narma has mummies and sarcophagi.
Yes.
So Narma is like the Egyptian Shah civilization. It's like a pan-Egypt from the earliest to the latest eras.
Yes. We've had a new era come to Civ, which is the Enlightenment era. I know you've been involved with a lot of the art with that, Jan.
Oh, not only artwork.
Not only the artwork.
Yes, yes. Myself and Poakai had the very idea last year. So we kind of are behind the conception of the mod and planned the tech tree in early design stages together before we got feedback from the other team members. I don't want to sound presumptuous, but myself and Poakai are pretty much responsible for it right now. I was also involved in the design, and probably still am, because there are some issues that need addressing in regards to the technology connections and such.
You've also created quite a few of the artwork for the Civ that you've done in conjunction with JFD?
Yes, yes.
Came out the other day?
Yeah, yeah. Most of the artwork for the Enlightenment mod was made either earlier this year or last year, even.
Yes.
Because I think we had the idea for it in April last year, but we didn't work on it because we had other mods and stuff like that. It happened that in last month we had time for it. And with the prospect of the Enlightenment mod coming out, some of us guys were discussing possible new mods. And one of us jokingly suggested, hey, maybe we could do an Austria or something like that for Enlightenment. And Austria started. Then someone, hey, we only like Russia under Alexander the First now. And we did that as well. So it came kind of like an avalanche.
One of the nice things, though, was that although we knew that the Enlightenment era was coming, when it just came out like it did, it was a bit of a surprise. It all came at once, but nice, a nice surprise. It was, one of those days where suddenly you do get a lot of stuff and it makes a big difference. It made a difference to get those civs in as well as the extra Enlightenment age, I think. And I noticed that somebody's done, is it Zvi, who's done some change to one of the units?
Yes, yes. He isn't affiliated with us, but he really likes the history of the Holy Roman Empire and the era surrounding it.
Yeah.
So he just did it on his own accord, and we are including his models. He's doing a great job for all those little details.
Cool. We'll probably talk a bit more about the Enlightenment era at the next modcast then.
Yeah, yeah. Why not?
First of all, we'll turn to you, Vice, if you tell us a little bit more about your design and your work and what it's all about and how you got into things. So how did you actually get started with your modding on Civ 5?
Well, it started over 2 years ago, around May of 2013. I make fictional civilizations. I make civilizations that aren't rooted in world history, unlike a lot of the other more popular modders, mostly just because that's where my interest lied. It's not that I don't have interest in history. It's just, it feels like I wouldn't be able to make historical civs as well as I could fictional ones, in a sense.
Right.
I guess in some respects, when it is fictional, people can't dispute quite as much that that's right for that save. It's like, you know, as soon as you do a historical save and you give it a particular UA or any other attribute, people immediately come in and say, oh, I would have done something slightly different there. With your sieves, it's less likely that they can do that.
I've seen people get in over very, very heated arguments over what fictional characters would or wouldn't do.
Oh, really?
I'm sure they would argue about, like, of course, like if an example of like Lord of the Rings sieves or Game of Thrones or Wheel of Time. If you had a certain faction acting a certain way that they felt didn't reflect what was in the books, then I'm sure somebody would get in an argument. Okay. This is the internet. They'll argue over most minute things.
Duly noted. Some of your sieves then follow the, is it the Modoka Magica?
Yes, that's probably one of my more popular ones. One that I haven't really visited in a while. I will be coming back to it at some point, but I'll overwork myself on that mod, and so I've started branching out more.
I was looking through your sieves recently, and I'm not personally a fan of Modoka Magica scenario, but I do really like your sieve designs on there. So I think sometimes it's one of those situations when you realise under the cover there's actually some really good modding that's going on there. For example, your Thief of Time infantry, when it captures a city, it steals a promotion available to the UU of the city owner. That's a fantastic idea. Never thought of that. And you have another one who gets a science boost when they kill a unit, which I've not seen before, and I wouldn't be sure how to do. So really interesting modding going on in those, I think.
The whole idea of translating all these anime stuff into Civilization, how plots and all the characters translate into this sort of kind of mechanical approach, especially in modding when you have to come up with so many effects for all those things that characters do or things happen to them in the anime.
Yeah, and the thing about that is sometimes you really have to extrapolate. You have to kind of invent something that may not have been there, but something you feel might work, that might actually fit in with their personality, especially with the Madoka civilizations. When I first made those, I actually never intended to make more than two of them. And at the time, just a single one. The other ones actually came out as a result of my inability to mod at the time, actually, because I made a character as an alternate leader because I couldn't figure out how to get a certain effect to be done via Lua. But then I eventually figured out how to make the original effect work, but I didn't want to delete the new leader that I made. And that just eventually spiraled into make a leader for every one of the major characters.
Yeah.
And in that series, they never even come close to leading nations. So I really had to extrapolate and just invent some stuff that was in line with their personalities.
What you're basically saying, you are writing a fan fiction.
Basically, yes. I mean, all of these mods are fan fictions. It's just a different form of fan fiction, as far as I can tell you.
One thing I did notice with one of the civs in particular, you've invented something. Is it a dynamic 2D leader screen?
I've used that in all of the Neptunia civilizations.
Okay.
I had originally made that because these are leaders that can actually change from one leader to another in the middle of a game. Right. And I needed something to actually display that on the leader screen. Without that, if you change leaders in the middle of a game, you'll just get that gray screen with the "there is no scene loaded for this leader" error.
Okay.
I coded that just to overcome that limitation. I eventually realized that I could use that for a lot more than just swapping those leaders out. Currently got it to where they've got different leader screens for every emotion they display to you, whether it's friendly, guarded, hostile, afraid. They've even got a special one for the turn they denounce you, or if you're at war with them.
I can see Yam going white at the moment, just thinking, gosh, JFD doesn't start asking for all of that.
Well, fortunately, he is polite enough not to demand it. Because I know that if I were to not update all my old leader screens, but do new leader screens with different things, I would start adding war-themed stuff in the backgrounds and not only change the leader's face, but all the surroundings or something like that.
Yeah.
So I know that would triple the amount of time I would need.
I think the thing with my leader heads, if I were to do that, because I do them in poser, it wouldn't be too much difficulty for me. In that situation, I probably wouldn't be changing the artwork in the background there. But with the way poser's set up, once you've got the character, it's a matter of just changing an emotion or the way in which they stand, and that's not very difficult to do.
Yes, you could just make them stand and look mean at you, and it would be enough. It kind of reflects what I always wanted in civilization. I think I once had a dream or something like that, or I just daydreamed. When you, for example, have the Washington leader screen, and when you declare war on him, you would have two blue coats emerge from behind the curtains or something like that and look mean at you or something like that. And when you have the Phoenician leader screen, you would have an armada sailing from one side when you declare war. So this presents such an opportunity, this dynamic leader screen. And I hope I would have the time to do it one day. Maybe when we move on to Civilization VI, I could do it as a farewell kind of thing. But it's so much time to do, especially with how many of those leader screens would have to be updated.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't become the standard that people expect it with everything.
Well, it could. I can see it becoming a standard. Why not? But
yeah, I know what you're saying. I was saying that tongue-in-cheek, really, more than
yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, I kind of get a free pass, in a sense, because I'm basically taking art assets that have already been made by someone else and just pasting them together. But for those of you who are actually able to make your own art assets and make them look as amazing as yours, that does really increase the workload. I'm not actually expecting a more widespread adoption of it due to the amount of workload.
I noticed that you do support a lot of mods with your civs. Do you find that something that's straightforward to do, or does that create a lot of work for you?
It depends on which mod in question. Obviously, the one that takes the most effort is Events and Decisions.
Yes.
Because there are some Events and Decisions that I've written that are more Lua intensive than entire unique abilities of other civilizations I've made.
Yeah.
Like, one of my Neptunia civilizations actually uses events to reenact one of the infamous endings from one of the Neptunia games.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil it on air in case there's anyone planning to play the game, but it's a pretty notoriously depressing ending in a series known for being really lighthearted and funny, and it involves you basically having to go to war with the entire planet, and it locks you into the war state. You cannot declare peace anymore.
Goodness. I found myself that the Events and Decisions take a little bit of time to actually get modded in, but I think they're well worth it. I think it's one of the best mods that we've actually had, and it has actually changed quite a few civs, made them more interesting. And that's one of the reasons why your civs are interesting, of course, is that the variety that we've got now of the different things that a civ can do is phenomenal compared to what it used to be in previous iterations of civ. The choice of civ is very, very important now in Civ 5. And it's great that you've got another set of civs there that people can use and have even more variety. So thank you.
Thank you. Everything I've done is on the workshop. I mean, I don't just do anime. I also have video game civilizations, like for Saints Row, Metal Gear.
Well, I noticed the Saints Row things, first and foremost, because I played the game. The games. I wasn't a big fan of Metal Gear Solid, but I appreciated the existence, definitely.
I gotta say, I'm pretty disappointed in it recently, but I still like the earlier games in the series.
What is really great is that there's people that are big fans of those games that you do the civs for, and there's no one else actually catering for those civilizations. So it's great that somebody spent so much dedication on getting some of those civilizations out that would never have been done before.
It's definitely appreciated.
Lee, you put on the Rome under Scipio Africanus then?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and what your thoughts on getting that into the Civ world.
Well, it started basically with being bored by the way that Firaxis has always done Rome. And part of that, of course, is the limitations in the earlier games. Civ 3 and Civ 4, there wasn't a whole lot more you could really do. But I thought that the Augustus in Civ 5 was just boring as boring can be as far as a UA goes.
Yeah.
And I thought that the pre-Imperial Rome was far more interesting than what the Civ franchise has always gone for, which was the post-Republic. Mostly because in the Republican era, you had these huge factions infighting. And it's amazing that Rome survived to become an Imperium, because in the Republican period, they were just doing all kinds of crazy, let's have a round of civil war. Then let's go fight our enemy. No, let's stop. Let's go fight another round of civil war. But when I started looking at doing a Republican era Rome, obviously the constant civil war thing I really couldn't do, because that would be horrific to the player trying to play as that civ. So what I went instead was the fact that there was a lot of craziness that went on amongst the famous Romans of the Republican period. You had Cato the Elder, who was an incredible prude and hated all things Greek. And then you had people like Cicero, who was great at making speeches, but when he was assigned to go out and govern a province, never actually managed to make it there. So what I did was, let's put those kinds of abilities into the game in some way or other. And the only way I could think to do that was to do it through promotions and then make a great person that would have different kinds of abilities based on a random spawning system where when you got a great general, and that's what I ended up using was a great general placement, they might be a really good general or they might be horrifically bad, which the horrifically bad goes back to the fact that very often when Rome sent their magistrates out to fight a war, sometimes they were utterly incompetent at that. So you get stuff like they send out a 100,000-man army and it gets slaughtered.
There are plenty of bad emperors.
Yeah, and I've added some of that into the mix in some of the promotions. There's one of the promotions that a Roman proconsul, which is what I made my great general replacement be. One of the things he can be born with is the fact that he's an embezzler. So when you send him out and he enters one of your cities, 10% of your gold will go poof.
I just wonder what kind of a player would appreciate such randomness, because gameplay in C5 is very predictable. There are kind of sets of gameplay you have to follow, so many players would not be accustomed to such a random thing, and there's a very narrow clientele for such randomness, but it's something that was sorely missed from earlier games, I think. So it's really flavorful.
I actually like the idea of a civilization. Oddly enough, the more incompetent the leader, the harder it is to really get a feel for how they should play as far as coding them goes. I actually find civilizations that try to implement stuff like bad leaders and incompetence to be interesting and fun. One of my most recent civilizations, all of your cities are puppet states and you can't unpuppet them without jumping through some hoops because the character in question is incompetent and lazy. And I had a lot of complaints about it and I eventually kind of had to loosen it up a little bit. But still, I find that kind of play style a real good change of pace from the base game.
I'd agree with that, actually, because certainly with my mod, what I've tried to do is have a range of different abilities. Some of the civs are quite easy to play, some of them more difficult to play. And I think it means that the players themselves can sort of say, well, you know, I want to really test myself here. So I'll play as an incompetent leader, so to speak, and see if I can still win the game. And how I do it will probably be very different to how I would probably play as some of the easier civs. We've talked on modcasts a few times before in that one of the things that people tend to do is have their own style of playing. And no matter what the civ is, they always seem to come back to that style, whether it's a builder or somebody who goes out and tries to conquer the world. And sometimes these civs that come up say, well, actually, you can't really play like that. You won't get the best out of it by playing your normal game. I think that really is good to challenge in that way.
That ends up being a goal of mine in a lot of my civs to get players to try a different play style than they're used to. Anything to break the basic Finnish tradition, beeline to Renaissance era, Finnish operationalism, four city. Try to break that mold as much as I can.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of people who prefer to play the game the same way each time, and that's certainly on them if that's the way they like to play. I personally prefer trying to break the mold of the same play style.
Yeah, I can definitely get behind that.
Civilization's been out there for 5 years now, this particular version of Civ, and it gives it a longer life, I think, when people do that. Was that your thoughts when you were creating this, Lee?
Yeah, I wanted the player to have to make some decisions about how they were going to use their great general replacements rather than, oh, I got a great general, let's go build a citadel, or let's go make a war. So based on the abilities that unit was created with, they'd have to decide what's the best way to use this guy. Is he good for war, or do I have to keep him away from the battlefield because he's going to be creating penalties for any units that are anywhere close to him?
I see. So, like, for example, with the embezzler that you mentioned earlier, would you know from the off that he was an embezzler?
Yes.
So with that, you think, right, well, possibly better keep him out of the cities and do something else with him.
And sometimes it's a case of they spawn with the ability to be a really good city administrator.
Yes.
But they also steal money. So then you have to decide, do I want to put him in a city as an administrator and accept the fact that I'm going to get less gold than I normally would have? But on the other hand, I get the other advantages from the fact that he's a better administrator. He makes the production higher, etc. Also, sometimes the way they spawn randomly is you'll have a proconsul appear who is better than normal at being a general, but he's also really good at being an administrator of a city. He makes buildings happen faster, etc. So then, you're faced with a choice. Do I use him on the battlefield if I want to fight a war, or do I leave him in a city and have him administer that city and get those bonuses in that city? Most proconsuls that can do when you're playing as Scipio's Rome is found one city.
So you're saying that they can build cities. Is that as well as settlers then?
Yes, yes. But each proconsul can only found one city. And in order for them to do that, they also have to be on the same tile with a combat unit. And the combat unit goes poof, it's gone.
If you were to have two proconsuls, you can get two cities. Or is yep. there... Right, okay. And in that city, then becomes a governor of that. And depending on his style... He gives to production or some gold or science or great people generation. Is that the basic idea?
Yes. When you move one of these proconsuls into a city, you have to actually hit a button in the unit panel and tell the game, okay, I want this guy to administer this city. Then what happens is you can't do anything else with that guy for a randomly determined number of turns.
Right.
So if you do that, and then two turns later, here comes Shaka with a huge army... Oops. Which I actually had that happen to me when I was first testing this out.
Just Shaka things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Encounters with Shaka rarely turn out well.
That level of detail is kind of another level of simulation, a level deeper that we have in civilization right now, because a lot of civs just scrape the surface of what the civilizations are. And even us with JFD, we tend to just get a basic flavor and work something around it, so the civ is easily accessible for most. But with this level of detail, like here, it's yet another level.
Yeah, it's one of the most complex civs I've seen. And coming from me, you should consider that a compliment because I like complexity. Some people don't, but the amount of detail you put into it is pretty impressive.
It's a nice thing to hear, especially given that every time I see that you release a mod on the workshop or wherever, I usually end up looking at it to see what you're doing in the code that I can borrow.
It's a loan you didn't ask for.
Yeah.
I only charge interest by the minute.
The danger for me, because I do steal quite a few things, I've got to admit, from other mods and everything. The moment I put in this particular general into Anno Domini, people start asking me questions that are better answered by you. And I find that with quite a few of the mods that I put in, I'm thinking, well, I put it in, it's great, and it really works well. Then people ask me something, and I'm like, I'm not quite sure. I wonder what Lee meant by that, or whatever. And, you know, I think people don't realise that you're not the original creator. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
I think I would like to actually have that room in Anno Domini, by the way. I've been kind of considering how to do it and whether or not it'd be a bit complex for that, but I do like it. I think it's something, again, that we talked about things that were very different. I think that's definitely something that would be, again, a civ that's really different.
Yeah. The only thing with Rome, led by Scipio, is that I had to set it so that you can't have him as an AI player.
I noticed that.
Because the AI will just have absolutely no idea how to deal with any of this. They're just going to try to plant that guy for a citadel over and over and over, and they have aren't going to be able to understand that, no, you can't do that. In fact, you're not able to use proconsuls when you play my mod to build citadels. You can't do it.
Really?
So you have to come up with a different way of getting that nice choice strategic resource stolen away from your neighbor.
Making the AI understand complicated Lua scripts is one of the hardest parts of it, I've found.
Yeah, I don't even bother.
I try. Sometimes I succeed, maybe. The one I was talking about, whose entire empire is annexed most of the time. I've given that character some rudimentary AI. I still think she doesn't do very well, but at least she kind of works, and I'm okay with that.
I think it's good to play against a variety of play styles the AI can possibly come up with. And maybe something like this, it is very complicated, but at the same time, it's probably the level of detail some players like to play at.
Yeah, and a lot of players just like the very fact that they have an interesting character as an antagonist.
Yeah.
if they can use their abilities to the fullest potential, it is most appreciated, at least by myself.
Yes.
But of course, the human player still has the advantage of knowing exactly how the abilities will work.
Yes.
In all the situations. So I think expecting the AI to know how to work all the time is a little bit unfair still.
Yeah.
Is there a way to modify the AI to use it the way you want to have the units use?
Well, I know that there's like, what, Vice, there's like 4 or 5 different smarter AI mods out there, but none of them really allow the AI to really be more out of the box, I guess is the way I would describe it. I mean, they still wouldn't be able to handle the concept of what I'm doing with promotions for a great general, for example.
And when it comes to a Lua-based unique ability like that, the only way you could ever give it any kind of understanding is to actually write it into the Lua script. Usually on the player do turn event, check if the player is not human, and if the player isn't human, go through whatever routines. That's a lot easier said than done, but that's how I've done it.
Do the flavors come in anywhere? Could you use those to influence some decisions, maybe with the choice of great general in your mod, for example, Lee? Or is it the fact that it's just one unit, essentially, with a bit of randomness around it, that the flavors would be the same?
Yeah, the problem is, from what I understand of some things that Howard has mentioned, is that the behavior of the AI with respect to great people is to a certain extent hard-coded. If they're looking to do X, then they're going to do Y with a certain type of great person, and they're not going to do anything else or consider anything else.
Okay.
Yeah, I can pretty much confirm that. And on the other hand, in the Battle Royale, the Soviets had a great general spam and built like 7 citadels in modern-day Belarus and stole a whole lot of useless land now from the Polish. A citadel next to a citadel in a box. So I don't know what the AI logic was behind that, but it looked hilarious and sad at the same time.
As well as the Rome mod that you've done, Lee, you've just recently put out some more utilities, haven't you?
Yeah, there's one I'm called Unit Spawn Handler. And that grew from helping somebody else deal with a scenario, World War II in Guadalcanal. And what he needed to do is he needed to spawn units, an invasion fleet, for example, on certain turns. And what he also wanted to do was randomize the location where a Japanese fleet would appear to attack the Americans at Guadalcanal. Of course, that means you start randomizing the locations where the units appear. And then, of course, since the AI is stupid, there will always be a unit in the way, right? Mm-hmm. So I developed that in order to help him deal with some of those issues. The more I worked on it, the more it grew until basically it came to a point that I decided I may as well just make this a utility available to other scenario or mod makers to use to just handle all this detail of spawning units into the game. The biggest problem is air units. There are just so many ways they don't do what you would expect them to do when you're trying to spawn them into the game. The other utility that I wrote recently, and for a while there was a bug in it, but I've resolved that, allows you to dynamically create effects using policies so that if you want, for example, 104% of something, say extra production in the Empire, you can use this dynamic policy system to do that. Or you can create more unhappiness or more happiness or any of the things that policies can do that use numbers. Obviously, you can't do any of the things that are on-off conditions, like the one shot, pick this policy and you get a great general.
Policies is something that I use quite a bit when I'm doing the events and decisions. Create a dummy policy that will have an effect that then goes into the event or decisions in particular. And also for unique abilities as well. Quite a variety of effects that the policies have, isn't there?
And the reason I drafted the dynamic policies system was that when you do that, a lot of times you end up saying, okay, I got my dummy policy and it's going to give 10% of this.
Okay.
Well, it sure would be nice if I could say, well, sometimes give me 10%, sometimes give me 15. The only way you're doing that is, okay, now I'm making 2 policies, one that has 15 and one that has 10.
Okay.
And then that leads to the next question of, well, maybe I wanted 17% based on what's going on and elsewhere, you know, number of cities, whatever the requirement. So then instead of making more dummy policies, you know, I just went ahead and made a system where you can select the integer amount of something you want, and then this utility will implement that for you.
Fantastic.
Again, the other thing just to note, Lee, as well, is that you have helped so many people with Lua on the forum, and that is really appreciated, myself included. So thank you for doing that.
Well, you're welcome for that, definitely. I do it as a payback because I got a lot of help when I was first learning that from Hoard and other people.
Any other things to discuss about your modding at all, Lee?
Well, other than the fit as usual, I'm working on other new stuff. One thing I'm working on is what I call era buildings. And what that is depending on the era you are in, you can build certain buildings, line of buildings that give you a little extra happiness. And there's a line of buildings that give you a little extra food. But you can only build, for example, the food building, the one that goes with the classical era, while you're in the classical era.
Okay.
And then when you go into the medieval era, that will be updated and it'll change to the building you need for the medieval era.
Right.
And if you've already completed one of the classical era ones in one of your cities, you have a choice to upgrade it to the one for the medieval era. And basically, as you go along, so there's really only 5 or 6 total buildings that you ever really are building, because what you're doing is you're upgrading the previous version to the new version for the new era, and it's generally going to be just a little bit better than the old version.
Essentially, that's what we're doing anyway with Civ, isn't it? We're filling buckets, in a sense, so someone once said. The science bucket, the culture bucket, etc. And how we do that is by building the building. So another way of doing it is by upgrading.
Yeah. The way that Braxis kind of handled it was, okay, eventually you get to a point, you discover the right tech, and now you can build a library. Okay, then you have libraries for a while, and then all of a sudden you discover a new tech, and now you can build a university. But, of course, the way Phyrexis did is first you have to build the library, then you can build the university.
I'm with you.
Whereas the way I'm doing it is, if you hit the Renaissance era, you can just go ahead and go straight to the Renaissance era version of the science building. You don't have to build all of the previous ones from the ancient era, then the classical, then the medieval, then the Renaissance. You just build the Renaissance version.
Yeah, like progress doesn't wait for everyone.
Right, right.
I guess really people wouldn't be building monuments in the Renaissance time, would they? They'd be building whatever was relevant in the Renaissance era.
Right, so. Right.
That definitely helps to preserve the gist, the feeling of every era you're in, more than building the ancient buildings from the ground up and sluggishly making your city valuable.
Right.
That is one of the things that keeps people from expanding further as the game goes on. You don't want to have to put so much of an investment of time and gold into making a new city when you can just keep building the ones you got that are already brought up to speed.
Right.
The Mercenaries mod. Now, that's surely one that can be used with different civilizations. I've certainly had some fun with that with Anno Domini. Thought that was a brilliant idea to bring that in.
I really, really like the idea behind it, and I am determined to make one of my Metal Gear Military Sans Frontier civilization actually have a different, unique ability once Mercenaries is loaded.
The thing is, I found when I was putting it in with my own mod, it was so easy just to change the Mercenaries to fit in with the style of Anno Domini, and I'm certain you'd have the same effects when you were trying to do it for your civs. You'd be able to do something that actually fits into the whole world of those civs quite easily, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't seem possible in the base code, but I'm going to try to work with it. I actually want one of my civilizations to be able to hire out their own soldiers as mercenaries.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So their soldiers can be like transferred to another civilization when a contract is enacted, or what?
Right, just like that, because the civilization itself is in a private military company, as a lot of the organizations in the Metal Gear series. So for them to actually be able to hire out those mercenaries would go a long way into helping immersion with that civilization.
Yeah, definitely. And I think in the base mercenaries mod, you have the Diamond Dogs referenced.
Right.
For a late era unit. So it's already there.
So what happens if I hire out the mercenaries from your civ vice and then they get killed off? Do I pay a tax for that or what?
They only last for 25 turns anyway, so they're only a short-term sort of gain for the money. But, you know, you do get that situation where all of a sudden you're attacked by the Zulu. You can just call on some mercenaries to boost your defences. What does happen, though, is those where you actually pay maintenance for, if you run out of money, then they can turn on you. Ah, that's a bit of a twist.
Right. I did see how if you cancel a mercenary contract early, they have a chance of turning on you, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. But, I mean, if they die, they die. That's what they've put themselves in the line of duty for that cash, and it's all part of the job.
I was just thinking what happened as far as with Vice's Civ, where he can rent mercenaries out to somebody else and then they get killed off. Does the person who rented them out, are they going to be responsible to Vice's Civ for the fact that, hey, we we let all your guys get slaughtered that we hired from you?
That's part of the job.
Yeah, that's how mercenaries operate.
If you're not willing to let those soldiers' ears get killed, don't hire them out.
Gotta break a few eggs, make an omelet.
Hopefully in 2016 we'll see Civ 6 emerge, because it's 25 years, it will be 25 years since the original Civilization. So there's a lot of speculation that Civ 6 is on its way, possibly next year. That's just speculation, I must say.
I think it's pretty certain. The date is too tasty to miss out on.
Well, it is. I agree with that, Jan. And of course, it's now been over 5 years since Civ 5 was created, so it's been a while. So with that in mind, are there any particular items on your wish lists for Civ 6 to have? You can say that from modding point of view or art style or anything at all.
I wish the icons for units could be reused, just so I don't have to work twice.
Yeah, I think the same for leader screens as well, because if they're covering the full screen, surely they'll be able to be usable in some format for the next Civ.
Yeah, and even if they are in another form, well, they can't take more than a full screen, so I'm all set. But if they are like windowed, like in Civ 4, I can still crop all the old leader heads. But maybe, just maybe, I will get into 3D next year. I don't know. Anything is possible.
Anything is.
I only have two items that are on the wish list, and neither of them really directly affect anything that I would do as a modder. But the first is, let's have access to the graphic engine so that we can do more with 3D models on the map, etc. And the other is, let's not have these hidden diplomacy stuff where I agree not to break a border promise and I have no idea as a player that I just made a diplomatic agreement. You know, when I click on that button, I should see something that tells me, hey, stupid, this is a diplomatic agreement you're making.
Yeah, exactly.
And pursuant to that, if I make a promise that I'm not going to settle for X number of turns, I should be able to look on the current deals and see that so that I remember when it expires.
I think there is a way to look at it, but yeah, it's very hard.
But they don't tell you about those promises. They don't tell you about when your promise to not settle is going to expire and when the promise to not attack is going to expire. Those don't show up on the current deals.
Yeah, it does in mods, like Community Patch, but not by default.
Yeah, the diplomacy, it needs a lot of work, because I think there are a lot of things that you used to be able to do, like trading maps, permanent alliances, and things of that nature that I liked having in Civ 4 that I would like to see come back again. And I know, getting more into detail with what the luxuries can do, because I liked having copper for the Colossus, ivory for the Zeus statue,
and yeah, in regards to diplomacy, I think the expansion pack for Beyond Earth is a proving ground for some ideas, like the diplomatic capital or war scores and such.
Yeah, there's probably some things that can come from Beyond Earth into Civ 6, like maybe even a satellite layer in the future modern eras.
Yeah, there are a couple of things in Beyond Earth that I think are being tested with Beyond Earth before Civ 6, so we can only hope it will be perfected and relatively bug-free. Let's hope so.
What I'm most interested in is not what they'll add. Well, there's one thing I hope they do not add to Civilization 6, and that would be a paid workshop.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, thank you.
I think they're not stupid enough to do this.
I don't know these days.
Well, did you see on Steam, and I don't remember what game it was for, where some game or other was offering paid tutorials?
It wasn't Skyrim, was it?
No, it was a
Skyrim
game.
No, Skyrim was paid mods.
Yeah.
And it was a disaster, so.
Yeah.
Right.
But paid mods will come back, but we don't know in what form.
just a week or so ago on those pop-ups that come up when you go on Steam that shows you all the new deals that they have at the moment. There was one for, and I forget what game it was for, paid tutorials on how to make a laser gun for whatever game it was for. So, yeah, concern there is very real, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with him.
I greatly, greatly hope that that doesn't happen, because I think all it's going to do is tear the community apart.
Uh-huh.
Like, I really like the community aspect of Civilization modding, the fact that we can share and share alike with code. If you add money into the picture, it's going to tear that to pieces, and I don't want that happening.
I think as well, if you take any mod, really, but, I mean, look at mine, for example, where there's so many contributors in one regard, but I've put the mod together, so how much would be going to each of these other people, and would it be worth it for me from a paid perspective? The admin behind it, the fact that it'd be paid, I'm not doing it for that, I'm doing it for the enjoyment of modding. But I think as well, with payment becomes expectation. If people are paying for something, they expect you to do it in a certain way, and it takes the fun out of things, I think.
Yeah, so if you have to include money in modding, do it like Skyrim Nexus. Like when you download a mod, there's a PayPal button to donate, optionally. So you can just skip it, but there is the option to kind of say thank you to a modder.
Leah and I were talking earlier, and we were saying that people don't tend to thank the modder very much. They tend to, in fact, complain on Steam about the most minor things. A lot of people don't actually read the instructions either and don't understand how to play a particular mod or a particular sieve, and yet the instructions are straight there, but they don't actually read them.
Yeah, well, this is the difference between Steam and old-fashioned kind of stuff like Skyrim Nexus or Civ Fanatics, where you have to go to the forums and read more stuff. On Steam, you just hit subscribe and play, and hopefully it's bug-free and ready to go. But when you have those old-style communities, you have to get into them at least a tiny little bit. So I think there's a gap of intelligence between players using mainly Steam and mainly old school stuff. Well, that sounded elitist.
Yeah, I mean, it was sad to see the Atomic Gamer go recently, because I got a lot of my mods on there and not actually on Steam. But a lot of modders now use Dropbox to keep their mods on or other free mechanisms. But I think Dropbox seems to be the most popular one.
Yeah, currently I have mine on MediaFire, but I think I'm going to move it to Dropbox, because when somebody follows a link to a MediaFire share page, good lord, there's a lot of spam.
Yeah, well, I'm just telling you now, when I moved on to Dropbox, I couldn't believe the emails were getting through.
Well, I was talking about the pop-up spam.
Yeah.
When you follow the link, it's sometimes hard to find, okay, where's the download button?
Because yes.
It all, MediaFire
that's annoying.
I used to use third-party hosting services, but nowadays, if I have users that are unable or unwilling to download through the Steam Workshop, I just send them to a Steam Workshop downloader.
Yeah, that's the other thing I've been using lately, too, is just do it there. Remarkably free of nonsense, and it's just straightforward and simple, and it gets you around the fact that half the time Steam doesn't want to download a mod anyway.
So going back to Civ 6 then, apart from the fact that we don't want to see paid mods, what do we want to see in it?
Make it easier to control the AI without going into the DLL core. Make it easier to give simple instructions to the AI through Lua or Python or whatever scripting language they use for Civ 6.
My wish is make it easier to create units. I think that certainly with Civ 5 and possibly Civ 4 before it, people have had to jump through hoops to try and create units that will actually work. And there's only a few people that are actually still competent at it 5 years later. Whereas with Civ 3, which I appreciate was a different sort of landscape, there were so many people creating these 3D units. It was something that became fairly straightforward to do for people using different formats and different art packages. It'd be great to see that, because that's one of the things that I think is missing from Civ 5, the variety of units.
Yes, I can agree with that. What civilizations would you like to see in Civilization 6?
Yeah, exactly.
In the base game, not in the expansions, because we have we have a run-of-the-mill set of civilizations in every base game, so maybe they could go out of the box this time.
How about we get multiple leaders for civilization back?
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yes, I've got to say I like that.
This has to come back. But if they could be done in a way that we can have different abilities for each leader or different sets of units, or whether it could be customizable, that you could choose a leader, choose an effect when you have coded a few of those. Like we have so many alternate Russias from JFD. For example, you could take Peter, but take Nicholas's unique ability and his units because you want to play such a Russia and not another one.
That just does seem like one of the biggest downgrades when going from Civ 4 to Civ 5. You know, I understand why they made each individual leader so much more unique than the grab bag of generic traits from 4, how much more graphically intensive the leader scenes are. But it would still be very nice to see multiple leaders per civilization again.
It certainly would. Hopefully in Civ 6.
One would think that Firaxis would realize the modding scene and how kind of big it is and how creative it is. So why don't they accommodate it with better mod tools?
Even though I don't particularly care for Beyond Earth, if you look at trying to code Itzalua versus Civ 5s, they added so many more game event hooks. So many more things were pushed out into Lua so that they would be editable. I wish they would have retroactively came back and done that for Civ 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not happening.
Yeah, sadly not.
For Civ 6, I can only hope it doesn't get all too cartoony like Revolution and all its mobile stuff.
I'm at least confident that won't happen. I think they're going to keep the Revolution style to Revolution. I hope I'm not wrong.
Well, yeah, but we had a kind of cartoon style in Civilization 4, but I'm kind of glad they dropped it in favor of a more down-to-earth design with leaders and units.
Do we want to see the guys come back that were in the Civ 2 Advisors Council?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that would be neater. And advisors that are more useful than those in Civ 5, that don't tell obvious stuff.
Well, or tell Venice that he needs to build another settler so he can expand.
Now that's efficiency.
Calling today in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I settle for the fact that I have a character against me and not an incompetent AI. To me, it's more important to have just a little bit of variety.
Yeah. I'd say if you're looking for a competent opponent, play multiplayer. That's my solution.
Yeah.
I can't stand the pace of multiplayer.
I'm much better at modding than I am at actually playing.
Yeah. Same.
I'd say the majority of the modders are because we're too busy modding to play the game.
Yeah. Just a few thoughts then on Battle Royale.
I'd watch a video where they did like a fast forward of it and watching the AI just go to war with other AIs.
Is there a common theme that same civs tend to win, or is it the case that it does tend to vary just dependent on how maybe decisions have gone?
The colonialist legacies are always on top.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Totally not related. To the man behind the battle royale.
Well, we haven't got it, of course, to explain it, so I don't know. When you're actually playtesting your civs, I think you've sort of half answered this with what you've told us, particularly Vice. Do you find that you fall into the same style each time, or do you really make it so that you have to rigidly stick to playing for what that mod's intended for?
You have to do a little both. You have to look at it from your perspective, and then you have to look at it from how another player is going to look at it, which can be difficult.
Yes.
Because you know all the ins and the outs of the mod, but you have to try to look at it from an outsider looking in perspective who doesn't know all the underlying code and who just wants to play.
Yeah. I think when I've created Civilizations, certainly again with the mod, I've been surprised when people have playtested it. They've played it completely differently to how I would play it and encountered things with the game that probably don't quite work correctly if they play it in their style, but work perfectly with my style. And I guess sometimes you can't always guess how other people are going to play the mods at all. But you've got to, like you said, their advice, you've got to do a little bit of both, really, to try and force yourself to actually play a particular way to see how the game will pan out or the mod will pan out.
That's why they do beta testing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This has been Modcast 60. Thanks for joining us. Today we've had myself, Rob, R8XFT.
Ian Boruta.
Zalpa Shark.
Vice Virtuoso.
Lee S.
Been really interesting speaking to you guys.
Hey, thank you for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. Would you come back sometime?
Sure, I'd love to.
Good. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye.
So I invented it just for that little... Well, not invented. Let's say coded. I coded that.
I think if I didn't have a job and I had nothing to do, then it may be something I could do 28 lead screens per sieve, but otherwise I think crack on with the other things for the mod in the time that I have.
Well, I don't have a job. I could do it if I had the money to leave.
I have to decide whether I'm going to keep calling one of my buildings a salon or not. Because if my era buildings and the Enlightenment era, there's going to be two different versions of a salon. And either I or Jan and their team is going to get comments about, what's up with the damn salon? It's one of the era buildings.
Ah, right.
Everybody can build it.
Yeah, we had the very same discussion because a few people were, salon is only for the French because Civilization 4 and stuff like that. So we were considering naming it a tea house or something like that. That, you know, you had...
That's one of
Vice's Sips
has got a tea house.
God damn it.
That is right. I can rename that one, though. I mean,
has anyone else played the Enlightenment mod yet or seen some of the new Sips?
I haven't had the opportunity.
No, I haven't had a chance to actually play it yet. I've just been working on compatibility to it when people are wanting to use it.
You're going to like this. I haven't had a chance to play it, but I have had a chance to steal from it.
You're too quick for us.
Well, you got your priorities straight. I know that much.
Well, yeah, absolutely. In my latest upload, it includes a couple of Jan's new icons because they're so much better than the ones that I had before. So, of course.
One day, Rob, one day.
A parlor, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, you could call it a parlor. Change your name so I don't have to.
Someone has to get this short to the end of the stick.
Has anyone else had a chance to play any of those civilizations, or have you been too busy modding?
Yeah, too busy modding, sadly.
I looked at the descriptions and all that, but I haven't had a chance to play any of them, because, like Vice says, too busy modding. So what were we originally talking about, Rob?
Civ 6 and...
Yep. What we wanted to see in Civ 6 in terms of modding.
What that is you build... apparently somebody doesn't like what I'm covering here for the moment.
Record date?
November 1st, 2015.
Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.